Welcome to What's Left, a weekly political discussion challenging the mainstream left. I'm Eduard Abarca with Andy Lipson. Today, we will discuss the topic of CRISPR and, did you say genetic engineering, right? Mm-hmm. Genetic engineering and the implications of it. It's something that we have decided to choose after I read something, National Geographic, and I thought it was very interesting. And then I thought about it more, and then I thought about how this could really have long-term effects in the shadow of eugenics, in the shadow of designer babies and desired characteristics and future consequences of this. So this is how I thought of it. I'd like to know what you kind of, your thoughts. So when I asked you, I said, what about this, Andy?
Yeah, no, at first I was like, I'm not sure. But the more I thought about what you were saying, I thought about science and capitalism. I thought about science and the profit system. I thought about, this is actually an area that I used to be involved in, actually. Not directly, I was more involved in the structural biology area. Although some of the stuff that's being done around, well, we're going to hear about this protein called Cas9. They have a lot of structural information and that was the kind of research I used to do. Not in Cas9, but so it was actually an opportunity to kind of get back into looking at what is up to date in biotechnology. When I was in this field, they were not able to do these sorts of things. It was more about putting little plasmids into bacteria. The genetic engineering they did at that point was much more crude and rudimentary. Although genetic manipulation has gone on for quite some time.
In human
history.
And I think, well, just to quickly tell the audience, that just to remind everyone, you teach science in high school.
Yeah.
But before that, I mean, you are a scientist. Before that, you were in research.
Correct. I did research science in a field at Johns Hopkins University in a field called biophysics. And I did something called X-ray crystallography of proteins, which basically allows you to look, see where the atoms are located on these proteins, or often their enzymes, to figure out how these giant molecules are able to do what they do. These are just like giant, amazing chemical factories that do very specific chemistry. It's the reason why Monsanto and all these companies are so interested in it, is it allows potentially the idea of doing chemical reactions with virtually no side products or byproducts, except for the one you want.
Well, this is why I just said where the topic is on CRISPR, so I'm going to just briefly just say what it is, and then I would like for you, if it's possible, given the background you have, to sort of just give us a summary on some details that might be necessary and for our discussion. And so CRISPR is this, and you will say the details, but CRISPR was invented by just for an alteration of a specific DNA in the mammalian genome. And there are multiple gene editing tools, but CRISPR is by far the most effective and precise. It works by injecting the DNA construct with three major components into living organisms, which I'd like for you to delve into. So give us a synopsis.
Well, let me go a little bit backwards here first. And we're going to take some time to describe this stuff a little bit. Obviously, there's some video, and I'm going to put pictures in some of these things. So if you want to watch this on YouTube, there's going to be pictures. But it's worth it first to talk about the three parts, the major pieces of anything that's put together in terms of cells, and then tissues that are combinations of cells. Really, you're talking about three things. You're talking about DNA, RNA, and proteins. There are other things. There's like a phospholipid around a cell and things like that. It doesn't fit into that area. But the three major parts of the whole functioning of things are DNA, RNA, and proteins. And DNA is like the blueprint, the scaffold, or no, it's not. It's the blueprint for what's going to be done. If what you're trying to do is make a movie, DNA is the film. You know, RNA is like the projector. It's the thing that reads the film, and then there's another process that has to happen with the intersection of the film plus the projector to make that picture on the screen. And that picture on the screen is like your proteins, okay? So the process for really, and proteins are the whole game for getting your cells to do the things they do. Different cells, that do different things have different proteins that allow them to perform that function. Mm-hmm. And all that stuff is encoded within your DNA. The decision to whether or not that stuff's going to be read means some RNA has to be read off of that DNA. Then that RNA is used to be turned into protein. And all these three terms, DNA, RNA, and protein, are going to come into play when we talk about CRISPR. Mm-hmm. Because CRISPR's real origin was in bacteria. Mm. It was identified, basically at some point it was identified that bacteria's main enemy and main opponent is not humans, it's viruses. Mm-hmm. Those are the things that often have killed bacteria. So bacteria turns out have found a way to protect themselves from viruses, and they use these what are called CRISPR sequences, which are clustered regularly interspersed short palindromic repeats. Mm. So think of it as what they mean is there are these repeated sections that are clustered near each other, and those repeated sections in between them are interspersed palindromic repeats. And in between those repeats, these palindromic repeats, are these sequences of DNA that it turned out this DNA that was in between these repeats was not native to the bacteria, but was actually the DNA of viruses. And so these sequences that were in between these repeats were actually ways that this bacteria would save itself from viruses. Because what would happen is if a virus came in and shot its DNA inside of the bacteria, if the bacteria had a sequence of that same DNA inside of it, because it's kind of like, hey, this is my blueprint for protecting myself, these Cas proteins would come along, read it, and then the Cas protein would join up with the RNA that gets ripped off. So you have that DNA, then you have the RNA that's read, and then the RNA plus these Cas proteins would go over to the virus DNA and start cutting it and break it apart. Mm. So it was basically immune to the it's immune to that virus. Mm. And so you could go through, if you looked at the different sequences in between those repeated palindromes, then you could see it was sort of like a card that it has for here's what I'm immune to in terms of viruses. Mm. If you have that sequence of DNA, then you're immune to it. And it turned out that what was done by this woman Jennifer Doudna from UC Berkeley, mm-hmm. although there's a big controversy over who really started this, was what they did was they turned that bacterial ability to defend itself into a little tool to basically clip out specific sequences of DNA. Mm-hmm. Okay, because the way they did this is they basically found that they could use this bacterial DNA cutting mechanism in any sort of non-bacterial cell. What are called eukaryotic cells that have a bacteria just has DNA running around inside of like spaghetti, like open spaghetti. Mm-hmm. A eukaryotic cell, like we are eukaryotes, basically we have a cell membrane and we have another little thing called a nucleus that we have our DNA inside of. And so this was actually able to, this same method was able to be used to express the Cas9 protein. And the Cas9 protein is the DNA clipping protein. And then she was able to basically create an RNA hybrid. One would be the piece of RNA that the protein has to recognize to say, I'm going to go find a sequence. And then there was a second sequence attached of RNA that is the part that it's going to be recognized and then clipped. And the clipping is done by the Cas9 protein. Yeah. So this is what is put inside of these eukaryotic proteins, whether it be yeast, whether it be a mouse, whether it be a monkey, whether it be a human embryo. And when they put these sequences, this RNA sequence, which is specifically made, and it's very easy to make RNA sequences, and they combine it with this Cas protein, which does the cutting, it goes directly to that piece of DNA that corresponds to the sequence that they want. It cuts it, what's called a blunt cut. It doesn't make a jagged cut on the two strips. Remember, DNA is two pieces, and it makes a blunt cut, so it breaks it into two pieces. And then you either insert your own new DNA inside of there, or you cut it and have it repair itself, and then you've essentially, you know, you've disrupted what that DNA sequence from operating. You can change single nucleotides if you want this way. So it's a very specific instrument for cutting and replacing DNA sequences inside of the cell. So that would be my initial overview of how this works.
Hang on with us, folks. Please hang on with us, because this is very important. Everything that Andy, you just described, is important, because this is revolutionary, very revolutionary. And I will tell our audience why it's revolutionary, because just to mention two things that can hold your interest, because the science topic, sometimes people can get a little bit. Just to mention, this is revolutionary in the sense that it has implications for how we can deal with malaria, with same-sex couples that are trying to have children. And this is a lot of things that it can really affect.
Right. Genetic-based diseases could then be potentially eliminated. Currently, all we have are screens for those genetic diseases. Mm-hmm. Now we're talking about the possibility of eliminating those things in humans. You're talking about doing very specific DNA engineering with plants to create, you know, vulnerability to certain things, or to get certain crop properties that you want in that plant. So it's very specific, and if you can identify a trait, and you can identify where it's located on that trait is located on the DNA sequence of some organism, then you have a tool that can right there go in and make very either big modifications of that protein or of that thing, or even very subtle modifications. Mm. What you want to do is something very subtle. So it's a very useful tool, but this is capitalism. We'll talk about that.
Yeah, and before we get to capitalism, did you want to add anything else to this explanation?
I would just say that it's not DNA modification has been going on for centuries. Mm-hmm. You can go back to the guy who worked the flowers, Mendel, right? And so that is DNA modification, but basically you're talking about a person breeding things, looking for traits and breeding things. It's led to all these different species of dogs. This is what, instead of called natural selection, it's called artificial selection. Humans have been doing this for a long time. Then later humans learned that you could use radiation or chemicals to alter something's DNA. But that would do it in a very random, scattershot way. It led to the idea of like the X-Men being created, like super mutants and things like that. Mm. So like, producing superpowers, which I don't think it will ever do.
By the way, Andy's a very big fan of comics.
Yes,
and Marvel.
I love those MCU. Endgame. Yeah, that was a good movie. Good movie. I didn't like it the first time I saw it. Anyway. And then there have been genetic modifications that can go on. They had little plasmids you could insert into bacteria that then you could possibly use, like gene therapy methods, but they were not very targeted. This is the first time you can literally put crosshairs right on that piece of DNA and get it. There are still issues. I do know that Cas9 plus the CRISPR-Cas9 combination in some cells doesn't work, and some cells goes to the wrong section and cuts it and things like that. So they don't know why that goes on, and that's still a problem. And I even think of the issue of the malaria curing. The method they would do for that has some really scary implications in terms of what's called gene drive. I don't know if you heard about that.
We'll
talk about that later, I think. Yes, getting rid of malaria or like the tick. What's that? The deer tick?
Lyme's disease.
Lyme's disease. Like getting rid of ticks that have Lyme's disease. These are potential uses they have, but the way they'll have to do it is effing scary. And you can kind of imagine how this could be very much weaponized to go after, in the same way that the United States went after crops using Agent Orange in Vietnam. Now you could be
talking... Monsanto.
Yes. Now you can talk about going after species that are native to China, species that are native to Russia, and wiping them out. Mm. But then you don't really know what's going to happen beyond that, because this can't be controlled. It's like, what's that dinosaur movie?
Jurassic
Park. Jurassic Park, like writ large. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Well, just in what you're saying, I'm just going to list out some things that have been thought that could be done with this with this biotechnology. I'm not going to go into depth. I'm going to depth, my English. I'm not going to go into depth, but I will link this article that I found on two magazines. I'm just going to read the list of sort of revolutionary things that people are have been playing with using this biotechnology. So these are listed under 11 crazy gene hacking things we can do with CRISPR. And this is remove malaria from mosquitoes, eliminate a patient's cancer, treat muscular dystrophy, yes. Make hulked out goats and dogs. This was Chinese scientists that have used CRISPR to delete genes that inhibit muscle and hair growth. That could be potentially for commercial meat and wool, but it's also, again, it's another form of a lot of consequences that could happen with that because we ingest these things as well. And give pig organs to humans. That is something that Harvard Medical School recently has. I'm just mentioning little ones that I'm curious of. A team of scientists that used a complex CRISPR molecule to edit 62 genes in pig cells at once. And they believe that these organs can be used for people to replace, like kidney failure, all these things. Treat HIV, which I will discuss one case in particular that has made a lot of woo-ha-ha in the media. Develop new kinds of drugs, make super plants, you were mentioning that. Engineer mini pigs, that's for people, you know, people can do all kinds of...
Like have a nice pet.
Yes.
Yes.
Treat blindness. Edit humans, which is what I really want to talk about later.
Designer humans, basically.
Yes. Yeah. The gene editing techniques have already been used in humans, so we will go into that. And the other one is that treat Alzheimer's disease. Let's see, and new cancer treatments, as I had said. Oh, and one that was interesting to me was reduce our need for plastic because CRISPR can be used to manipulate a type of yeast that transforms sugars into hydrocarbons, which can be used to make plastic, greatly reducing the need to rely on petroleum-based resources for plastics, easing stress on the environment. So those are just some of the things that I think if people can find interesting. The one I found the most interesting, which is I just called Andy immediately, was when I had read the National Geographic one for same-sex... couples could potentially have, it was just a headline, could potentially have children. They were testing two female mice to be able, it's complicated, I'm not going to go into it now, but just they were able to eventually have offspring of their own using this technology. But it didn't work very well with the two male mice because the pups died. But this is something that could be potentially used in the future. Now, go ahead.
And just to say something about one thing to know, obviously there's a lot of people who there's some people who have real concerns or real difficulties with using animals for science and things like that, right?
Yeah.
And there are some things that are I think are wrong that are done. Like I remember some animals being burned to like then figure out how to treat burn victims and things that are just unnecessary. But also do know this is that. Whenever they use rats or when they use pigs or when they use dogs or cats or monkeys, essentially what science has is what they have are animal models for. And what they're saying is these are the animals that that we think are closest to us with regards to these certain illnesses, with regards to these certain features or these certain effects. So for some things, like pigs are better human models than monkeys, even though we might think of ourselves as closer to monkeys than pigs.
Right.
But for some treatments, to see whether humans will respond the same way, it might actually be better to see how the pigs respond to it versus the monkeys. So just know that, like, basically when you're getting to human testing, they've got to climb the ladder, you know, and there are ideas about which type of animal is a better model for humans, that is, will likely have closer to the human-like response to this treatment. And most of the time, it's a monkey, but sometimes it's other animals. I just want that's how this works in science, at least. So just they're usually starting down. They start down here with the bacteria and the yeast, And then they move up to the more complex organisms. Obviously, mice are more complex, and then they move up the scale from there. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for, the ethics of using animals, I think, is important.
Yeah, I mean, I did not get really into that ethics part, but that is how it works in science. Mm-hmm. I do feel like there's some unnecessary stuff that goes on in science, but mm-hmm. I'm not against using animals in science as a way of learning.
But you're talking about the unnecessary usage.
Right.
So then let's talk of segueing into ethics.
And can we, maybe can we go to the malaria example so I can talk a little bit about
please
gene
do. Okay. No, please
Because that's just one area here that I
yeah.
So.
I'd actually like to know because I couldn't read all of these. It's just the ones that caught my attention.
So the theory about how they would get rid of malaria is malaria has to be carried by the mosquito, right? And so if you can make a malaria-resistant mosquito, then good, right? Mm-hmm. And so what they do, they have the DNA sequence that gives it malaria, that gives it malaria resistance, and they just stick it right inside there, and they can use CRISPR to get it inside there, okay? This CRISPR package, okay? But the problem is now you've got some mosquitoes, but you've got to get all your mosquitoes doing that. Mm-hmm. So which means the rough model, if everything works the normal way of genetics, is if you were gonna try to get change 10,000 mosquitoes, you need like 100,000 of these other mosquitoes to change that. That's an overwhelming. That's a massive amount, right? Mm. Well, here's what they've done with CRISPR to really goose the gene drive. What they've done is not only did they use CRISPR to insert the malaria resistance, but attached to that is malaria resistance plus its own CRISPR package encoded on its DNA. So when that mosquito has kids, all its kids will have the CRISPR that will insert that sequence into it. So all the kids get it no matter what. It's not like 50-50 chance, it's 100% chance. Mm-hmm. And so what this meant was that you don't need that many mosquitoes with this DNA sequence plus CRISPR attachment to create a massive effect of all your mosquitoes around you suddenly having that same DNA sequence. Mm. So that's a massive exponential growth rate. That's like a chain reaction of a nuclear detonation kind of thing. Mm. The fear is, if we don't actually know what the implications of some of these things are, it's not just going to be in one town in Africa or something like that. These things fly. They go around. You can basically imagine, not even within a generation of humans, within a year, all your native species could be wiped out, and basically you have this new species everywhere. Mm-hmm. So you better know what you're doing with that. And you also better know that if you're working in that area, that this thing doesn't escape. Because we are now dealing with something which, if it gets out, and they don't know exactly what the implications are, when you attach CRISPR to the gene that you're trying to change, you better know those effects, and you better make sure everything's sealed. Because if that thing gets out, you can wipe out whole species. And there's nothing you can do. They're literally, it's out of your hands now. This gene drive method that comes as a result of CRISPR is a complete knockout as it relates to, we could knock out, we could create only malaria-resistant mosquitoes. But the implications of it, of how I really think it's going to be used, are really in the area of, we're going to knock out whole fishing species or rice, types of rice that's grown in China using this. Things like that. That's how I foresee, maybe it wouldn't be rice because you'd have to have a fly, but something, I foresee much more pernicious use of these things, as well as accidental things.
I think we have seen some version of that when we think of genetically modified crops such as corn, which pollinates through wind, and corn has affected, even like in Mexico, genetically modified corn that has been grown in Mexico, in my country, where you had a variety and diverse corn seed, and then it has been affected because corn is a cross pollinator. So it really has affected farmers.
Yeah.
Their seed is now in affected because it's been touched, tainted, or whatever, by other corn, and then what happened in India with all the suicides? This is, I'm going a little bit off. India, what happened with all the suicides because farmers were being affected with this patent corn because it was from Monsanto, and Monsanto would go after anyone that was growing corn without their permission.
Right. So it would only have one season of growing, and you'd have to always go back to Monsanto for another thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
for the seeds.
Yes. So. I think this whole patent thing is stupid, by the way. I think it's just really disruptive, and, mm-hmm. and you know, people even tried to patent the DNA.
But that is the important thing, is that that this is going to be controlled not by... ultimately, these things aren't controlled by humans. They're controlled by the drive for profit, mm-hmm. and they're going to be used mm-hmm. by that. That's what's really going to run how these things get used.
Yeah. But this is just crap. So imagine what you're talking about. We're moving into other areas.
Yeah.
And I think this is the reason why, not that I think, this is many of the reasons why scientists have come out for this case in the media that happened in China, when a Chinese scientist, remember I was telling you, that decided to test on embryos before they were born on twins mm-hmm. To prevent HIV on these genetically editing their DNA mm-hmm. on
to make them HIV resistant.
And it was an outpour of rage from the scientific community, because there's a huge difference between taking some organ, or this case, I will say this, where in the case of humans, where an infant girl who was treated for leukemia with engineered T cells, that is like saying, I'm going to fix this part of the computer versus fixing the entire computer.
Because now those kids that person has will have that same DNA. Yes. This isn't one person. You're not fixing one person's thing for their life.
Exactly.
You are setting in motion a generational change.
Yes, because now they could have children.
Right, and their children will have that change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or they can pass that on.
Mm-hmm. And this is now we're seeing. I just was reading recently that they are having other risks, because we don't know what are the side effects of this.
And the thing, I mean, I think what's happening there is wrong. The piece that I want to point out...
I think I know where you're going.
Well, is that, do you know what's happened in London recently? Do you know what London passed a law recently? This is in London, where they basically have opened up this whole area of embryo exploration that is right now going on in China. Why is that happening?
But they don't let the embryo develop.
Yeah, they do the 7 days, but why are they doing that?
I did read something about this, right. but they kill the embryo.
There After 7 days, but they're opening this up for themselves. They are opening this up. And why are they doing that? Is because this Jennifer Doudna, who's in UC Berkeley, is in competition with the other patent company, which actually looks like they're going to win, potential patent holder, who looks like they're actually going to win if in all the K courses, and they're originating in Britain. So this is about money, and this is not about ethics. Yeah. And China ain't any better or any worse.
But China was the only one that actually allowed for children to actually develop, right?
But they're starting this. They're starting down the road in Britain.
Yeah.
So why is that? Why are people not going crazy? This is not. This is not the way that people are going nuts over here about China. China, look at their irresponsible.
It's
very much related to anti-Chinese sentiment as a result of U.S. imperial aims and the war we're trying to build up with them.
Yeah. And there is something to say about that. Yes, you're right. And where.
I'm not apologizing. I'm not saying that's right. I'm just saying I call BS on the people who are talking about, oh, China is showing no ethics, no resist, when they're beginning to open those very same doors in Britain, as they see this new pathway that they're going to be able to open money on, and they're going to be in a big biotech great position around future of biotech industry, because I think they speculate the patent's going to come from them, not from the United States.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yes, I agree. You're right. And
but we're not. I still believe that the ethics issue is there. It's just that I call BS on China.
And why the ethics issue? Because because of what everything that you just talked about, as far as the inheritance part. This is not just taking a part of your body to help you in some way. This is a whole generation.
And go ahead. You should say more.
And then we are going into designer babies as well, which brings up our dark past of history of rudimentary forms of gene editing, which wasn't through microscopic and laboratory extensive.
So you're saying CRISPR, CRISPR editing of the human genome to produce, like, what kind of outcomes in humans?
To produce a certain kind of characteristics that are sought after that our society would deem or a society in which, if we look back in history, that like Nazi Germany, they tried to do produce at that time
the natural way,
the Aryan race.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
And we have a history of that.
And people saying, I want to make my baby resistant to certain diseases. I want to make them smarter in certain ways. I want to make them stronger in certain ways, faster in certain ways. All these sorts of things. But here's the important part to remember is in each case we have to say, I want to do this, but the question is, can you afford it? Like that to me is also going to be the big thing. If this is accessible to all,
the benefits
like abortion, it's like abortion rights. Mm-hmm. If we're going to say this is accessible to all, then I'm open to the ethics discussion. But if we're going to say, if we're going to say that these things that we're going to be able to do for, we say, when they say we, they don't mean we, they mean rich people. Mm-hmm. Rich people are the ones who are going to have access to this, because they talk about CRISPR being inexpensive and easy at the lab level, but it ain't, and it is. If you have the entire lab infrastructure around you, it is relatively inexpensive as a way of gene modification, but it is not going to be inexpensive to do this at the human level, at the hospital level, with all the stuff that's going to come in behind it. That's going to be very expensive. We're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars, possibly millions of dollars for when people wanting these sorts of things, and that's going to be your entry price for having these kinds of kids. Mm-hmm. And so we're talking about, a two-tier healthcare system that's literally being built into the genes. Yeah. It cannot possibly be done ethically if it's going to be done so unequally. Mm-hmm. And it will be unequal because it's going to be there for the wealthy. If we could talk about everyone getting access to these things, it would change my discussion about what the ethics discussion would be then. You know, like, I don't know. So that makes a difference
to me. I see what you're saying. That, given in that light, I think you don't even want to discuss ethics. You want to, I see what you're
almost
saying.
Almost. Yeah. How can it be done? It can be done only unethically because it's going to be done so unequally. Mm-hmm. And if it happens to have some sort of Frankenstein monster effect on the rich, I'm not happy about that. But that's not what I'm worried about. I'm worried that actually they do build in things that's better for them again, that works for them again, and creates literally a genetic divide between rich and poor in the world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. I think when scientists are trying to convene together from internationally, this is not the discussion they are having.
Jennifer does mention that when they're moratorium the inequality, but also you should go ahead.
No, tell me. I didn't hear her.
She did. That was a piece of access. Dudna. It was access. And she, like, it's kind of like, what's that dude with Tesla? Who's Tesla?
Elon Musk.
Elon Musk is like, AI, we've got to, like, do something before he wants to democratize AI because he's concerned about AI taking over. And he's a part of AI development, or he's into that kind of stuff. This is a woman who has started down this road and helped unlock this thing. And she sees what a Pandora's box has been opened. So she has been calling for a scientific moratorium, and access is one of those things. Mm-hmm. But she's not talking about the kind of access we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Like, we're talking about everyone. She's talking about, well, more. Not just the rich, but maybe the middle class and maybe some wealthy workers. Mm. But she's not talking about people in Argentina or in Nicaragua or Afghanistan. I mean, I think she's talking about that, but you can't really talk about that unless you have a complete leveling and equalizing of all our situation here. You need, and that will require revolution. So I give her credit for that. But just like the scientists who worked on the atomic bomb, who thought that they were doing that with the idea that this thing will never be used, it will only be used as a threat. The minute they made it, it's out of their hands. Mm-hmm. And it was going to be used, and it wasn't just going to be used to end a war. It was going to be used as a threat to the Russians to say, you know, don't mess with us because we'll eliminate 200,000 people in a heartbeat, just like that. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's these things that scientists create, they have no control over. Mm-hmm. This is nominally controlled by the state that runs those labs, but even they, I would contend, don't have control over it because it's the profit system that will decide. So everyone who's talking about, let's figure out how we can deal with malaria right now, what's the discussion when we're at war with China?
Yes. And chemical warfare.
Right. Then it's like, okay, we've got to protect ourselves, so we got to knock them out. And we got to use everything we can to knock them out, and we'll have people here justifying eliminating species over there with this CRISPR gene. You know, yes. Those will be the types of things people will be doing in labs. And they're probably already happening.
Yeah. I'm sure many... And talk about the role of scientists. You were saying to me on the phone about their role, about they're just workers in this as well, because many have been used even to this day, yes, as in chem labs today, creating these bombs in just the workforce,
right,
for governments.
Science has a very ugly history in the name of progress, in the name of allowing itself to be used for some very ugly racist purposes, eugenics, looking at the cranium shapes of people to decide, you know, whether you're valuable or not. You know, all sorts of science and measurement have been used in all sorts of ways to justify negative things. And it was a construction of capitalism, that science and capitalism emerged together. And currently science really is just a tool of capitalism and the capitalists. It has to be liberated and democratized no less than workers do in order to really see what science can do. Because science has always been a tool of either warfare or when the scientists made robots and they said, we're going to make your life easier. They didn't make anybody's life easier. Everyone's productivity increased, but people had to work harder, and then other people lost their jobs. Mm-hmm. So the promise that they give of these things does exist, but it doesn't exist under capitalism. It exists under some different kind of system.
Would you say science and technology are a result of capitalism?
Yeah, I mean, they are a product of it, and they have created the increased efficiency of capitalist production. Mm-hmm. But within the inequality of that production, science will be of no real use to the working class until we have that revolution and we can put this under our reins and decide how humans can decide how we want to put this to use. We'll make mistakes about that, but currently humans don't really get to decide. It is the interests of profit, the interests of imperial aims that drive profit. That's why war plays in war so much. That is what will drive the use of these technologies. Is for somebody getting over on somebody else.
Yes. And would you go as far to say as well that scientists have been exploited under capitalism?
As workers, but they're kind of, I mean, I think it's almost like a middle class. I would say we've been willing dupes, and we've gotten our share of gold out of performing the function we have for the capitalists. There are plenty of scientists. Einstein was a socialist. There are plenty of Oppenheimer came out later against the nuclear bomb, but too often we just get played like chumps, and it happens too often for me to forgive scientists for this, you know. But I will give this woman credit. You know, I think she's trying to do the right thing, but she's trapped in a system that she does not understand is going to drive this thing. Her moratorium is going to get run over like a Mack truck. Because this is what I did an interview of that Chinese scientist who did this embryo work. He said, look, if I don't do this, somebody else is going to do it.
That's true.
And isn't that what every damn capitalist says?
Yeah.
If I don't do it, someone's going to do it. Why not me? Mm-hmm. You know, and they're right, actually. They're actually right. That's why this can't be.
He did say that. Yeah. All right. Well, let's segue into the part where I had told you that this is important to me. Mm-hmm. Why? And one of the reasons why you and I wanted to do this, my reason, really, was because of racism that we had discussed, that I wanted to discuss. You know? Mm-hmm. And I think we need to really look into this in the context of the U.S. American history here. Before Nazism, there was eugenics. This is before the time of Nazis here in the USA. Mm-hmm. There was an article in the Eugenics magazine where Harry Laughlin was this person who said, the Nazis consulted us before we consulted the Nazis. Mm. This is where the Nazis were inspired by their ideas. I saw this by a great author that I will put a link to on your favorite show, Democracy Now!
That's good, dude. Yeah. So we learned about CRISPR.
I would like to tease Andy about this. People who have been following us will know the inside joke. But the point being is that Harry Laughlin is the one who said this about Nazis. And I found that very interesting that even FDR even considered Japanese a sort of a race that we don't need. Hmm. FDR, a very great, supposedly great, I should, because no one can see my quotes on the deal, so they probably think I'm thinking FDR is great.
Beloved, though.
Beloved person here in the US, even by Bernie Sanders. No. Hmm. So we were discussing, all the repercussions that could happen potentially with species, no? Mm-hmm. And we have seen some repercussions that have happened with crops, just with genetically modified organisms, mm-hmm. GMOs. And now I want to move into, well, what about human editing? That is what I was interested in this as well. And Richard Dawkins came out on this as well. I saw an interview on YouTube. And this is where we begin having one of the cousins of Charles Darwin. His name was, ¿cómo se llama? Francis Galton was one of the fathers, founding fathers of this idea that that natural selection happens out there and survival of the fittest from Darwin's findings. And he thought, well, what will we do with this? How can we have this here on humans? And that is how he thought we could have accelerate a form of natural selection by having
a better race.
Exactly.
And a master race.
Yes. Mm. And Herbert Spencer, actually, in that time as well, this is the late 1800s, early 1900s, even said this is why we shouldn't even have any class laws, even child labor laws, because we should have the survival of the fittest. People should just work it out to survive.
Yes.
Yeah. So I thought that'd be very interesting because you're a socialist, and I thought Herbert Spencer should be mentioned because of that. That hands off, because let it
let who capitalism survives? Rip.
Or the Hunger Games.
Yes, right.
Right. So this is where eugenics came from. It's from that Darwinism thought theory of potentially artificially selecting the human race, which involved sterilization. He studied as well, just like Mendel, the plants, the pea plants, as well as twins, to see if it was nature versus nurture, to see which was the greatest factor. He did not actually believe that it was nurture. He thought it was nature, that people were inherently smart, because he thought this idea of genius, he used the forgot the word he used with an E, immanus or impetus or something with brilliance, the synonymous word with brilliance, but...
Enlightenment.
No, it wasn't this one. It was another word. But I thought that the genius, this idea of genius, was to be something that should be sought out for, something that we should all seek to thrive to have in our society. And so he believed that this is the only form to have that was you have to have... At the time, British gentlemen only breed with other people to have the same sort of hereditary smartness. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you were, quote, unquote, feeble-minded. Mm-hmm. And that term was here used in the USA to create laws to sterilize women if you were feeble-minded or if you had people in your family that were feeble-minded. Mm-hmm. And this is where that has, because of that origin and the root of that, that spread like fire in the USA. And we have enacted laws to test that out, to even sterilize. And even as far as recently, in this state, in California, in 2014, it was allowed legally to still sterilize in prisoners until 2014, when they just enacted a law to say that no more sterilization. In 2014, we're in 2019. I think people really need to get this across, the message across, that this is still the 70s.
This isn't 100 years ago.
Sterilization of women, especially immigrant women. And there was an author as well that talked about the immigrants that were coming here, who were the better Caucasians of all the Caucasians, and that were coming through Ellis Island. And pitting white against white for their races, for ethnic backgrounds, excuse me. And so this is what this was, like I said, spread like fire in the USA. Mm. And like I already mentioned, that the Nazis got inspired by all of this eugenics movement here in the, and that started off from Francis
Galton,
and then spread like fire in the USA. Mm. So that is a brief history, and look where we are now here. In that dark history, we are talking about CRISPR. What are the implications of human editing, mm-hmm. and these cold new words of designer babies, mm-hmm. that we are not saying what the neo-eugenics could be, mm-hmm. right? And that is what I am afraid of, mm-hmm. because just like you mentioned with malaria, with the species, and then you can have this, we could be messing up humans as well, but in a different way, because we're looking for a certain characteristics, such as the Nazis were doing for Aryan race, when they were measuring even Jews or Polish people that could pass for German, the right German with the blue-eyed, blonde mm-hmm. hair, measuring noses, measuring body parts, because they were sought out for, even though Hitler himself did not look like that. But mm-hmm. you know, and that is that's what CRISPR could eventually delve into.
Yeah, and you're putting a tool with that immense power in the hands of people who don't have the responsibility to use it in a system, I should say, that cannot be trusted to use it responsibly.
Yeah. So I think I'm curious where, and you mentioned some of it already in the context of capitalism, but I am curious in how this could be seen in the context of capitalism and socialism used with this analogy.
Well,
that you have some thoughts in response to.
I do, and I think one thing to think about is, with people like thinking about, it's worth thinking about, why are people thinking about, like, I want my kid to do this. Mm-hmm. You know, like video games allow you to do this. You have this kind of eyes and this, your feet, you'll have this much strength, and people like basically turning their kids into like a video game product, you know, so with this, and they want the strongest character possible so that they can climb up a ladder, mm-hmm. and their kid will have these advantages. I think
we're even having some of that with artificial insemination, with lesbians looking for certain characteristics and certain men for sperm donation
right.
stuff.
So I think that drive, that desire, is very much rooted in capitalism, in the competition that's endemic in capitalism, mm-hmm. that people are feeling like, you know, it's whoever can climb highest out of the bucket, you know, mm-hmm. and that's what this whole thing is. It's like, I want my kid to have all these advantages because I feel like they live in essentially the Hunger Games kind of world, mm. you know? And so it at one level, if you are in that sort of dog-eat-dog system, which Francis Galton didn't just make it that way. He was looking at how the world was around him, mm-hmm. and saying, I see in the natural world as much violence and competition and bloodthirstiness as I see in our social system, and I think this is just natural. I think capitalism is natural because it mirrors what I think is going on out there in the animal kingdom, which is a very perturbed way of understanding natural selection,
yes.
which we can get into later.
Yeah.
Because natural selection is actually about abundance and diversity and growth, actually.
And over a period of thousands of years.
But it's not a winnowing down, actually. It's an expansion of species. That's what it's trying to describe, why there's more and more things, a plurality of things, and yes, things change, but they are actually, they exist as in a balance for a period, and then things change, and then they find a new balance. But it was always not attempting, natural selection was not attempting to describe how you were getting this one perfect thing that was master of all. It was actually trying to describe, how do you get this whole flourishing and plurality of species from one thing, from bacteria, actually. How do you start with one and create so many? Not how do you start from so many and create one. I mean, that's how Galton sees it, as like, how do you create this perfect thing within this many? And that's an inversion of really what Charles Darwin was talking about and trying to explain in the natural world. Mm. So the thing, though, that I do believe is that's how it feels here under capitalism. It feels like it's every person for themselves. Mm-hmm. So it's my family for myself. So I got to get my kid every advantage I can give him. And what is missing from that? When we even think of our own lives, about what constitutes happiness and contentment, that doesn't just exist as an individual. It does exist within a society, within It's just in a social constant, feeling if you find the right friends, the right partnerships, the right associations. So the notion that happiness or contentment or success can be put in your genes, independent of what kind of friends that person finds and life that person has and social, like, it's, again, that's an inversion. And capitalism gets us to think that way. Mm-hmm. But I think socialism means we understand things on a different way. I do think people who make a revolution, a collective revolution, will think much more of, like, what sort of society and how are we in association with one another? And whether your kid has what is called a disability, and we have to understand that notion of disability is a little twisted in our current education system, because really it's about what kind of ability do you have, actually, yes. You know? Then I don't think those things matter so much to people. I don't think it's just about finding a place for everyone in that. And that's what people are trying to do. That's what people would try to be doing in social society, is find their place within the community, you know, and be within that. And that's where your safety lies. It doesn't lie in your individual abilities and individual features that allow you to be successful. It's you being in a web of relationships, and that you having a place within that, and that it's a society that believes everyone has a place with that, and everyone has a potential contribution. So in such a society there, why would you need to mess with anything? Other than, okay, I could see, like, well, let's not have some of the diseases and da 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 da. But beyond that, trying to, like, make stronger this or more intelligent that, I mean, who gets into that? That's kind of weird, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. It's like, just have your kid, you know? Mm-hmm. I think if we can stop certain diseases, we should. And if we can not knock them out before they're born, let's do it. I think so. Although I think it has to be discussed and voted on. We can see what the implications are. But I think beyond that, why do we need all the other stuff? Mm-hmm. Like anything that we all know, that many of the things that have marked us with tragedy, even in our own lives, have been some of the features, once you overcome that you're most proud of, that make you who you are, mm. you know? And so this notion that about perfection, even, that just seems like somehow to me, that seems capitalist. You know, like, that seems like something driven by capitalism, by a capitalist mindset. And I think a socialist mindset doesn't get all worked up about, like, everything's got to be all, you know, we got to make sure my kid is perfect. Otherwise, it's lights out. I think people would think differently.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then you're bringing up an issue where we have also discussed this with one of my friends, where where people, all people, I believe all people have an ability to, unless obviously you have some cognitive disability, but all people have the possibility to learn a language, or mm-hmm. maybe you're better linguistically, but you still have the access to, or you can be musically inclined, or people can try to, this idea that intelligence is inherited, and that certain races, such as the Western race, or the Western civilizations have contributed to more, such as I hear the rhetoric here, yes. even currently in
Correct.
Our politics.
That is true.
That only certain people have these inherited characteristics of smartness, is believed that is what we should be breeding more of, is a form of, that is racism.
That is,
But what I'm...
And it's ignorance too, because so much math and science came from the Middle East mm-hmm. and Africa, so,
algebra,
sorry.
Where did it come from?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The invention of zero, well, many civilizations, but the Mayans, mm-hmm. and so, it's just, this is what I currently see the rhetoric even being out there, being fomented.
Yeah.
And in other ways as well, where even this current administration and just the society in general, where immigration should only be allowed on a merit basis, because mm-hmm. people should come in with certain characteristics that are desired. Mm-hmm. And that normally, as Trump, I will say, because he said this, people from Norway, and not people from shithole countries such as African countries. Right. And that is how I think that we should see that it's not just Trump. Maybe people have not said those specific words that give Trump the sort of highlight of believing that this is his words, but this is the idea that immigrants should only be here for the improvement, and that would mean from Western civilizations.
Right.
And other than that would be just...
or Canada.
Right. Or other than that, it would just be immigrants infecting
Correct. invading.
Invading and infecting, and thus they should be sterilized. And right. We have a history of that here, mm-hmm. of people that have been sterilized, Latina women in Los Angeles.
And I want to remind you, remember that woman you had talked about who was paying people to be sterilized?
Right.
Don't let her off the hook, but she's not the problem.
Yes.
It's a national...
She sterilizes, she sterilizes. Just so we can give context to our audience, we were talking about this in some episode, I forget now.
I can't remember.
But it was on a woman paying drug addict women, and these were normally women of color, down in the southern states, where she travels in a trailer paying people for sterilization. And her intention, according to her, it's documented that she did a little interview with Vice and other people outlets. They were just saying, briefly... she was saying that she has adopted. She's a white person, but she has adopted black children and all because they were all, they were born. What's it called? Alcohol or babies?
Or they were addicted or something like that. You know, crack babies or something. I don't like that term.
No, but this is the term that they were using. Yeah. So, anyhow, so
yes, but you're talking about something way bigger than her. But I think that past that we have, that is our present, I do believe informs her actions. But you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we need to talk about this as far as what laws we can to control people. I think we need to have. I don't know what we're going to name it as, but the topic, by the way, just FYI. That's I don't know. You can keep or not. So that I think is what I wanted to highlight. That this is a biotechnology that has the implications of going back to those darker times, because there are people out there that see this as. Just like you were saying, for capitalists who see this technology for chemical warfare or whatever, because that is their mind, and other people see it for profit, there are another segment of the population that will see this too.
Right.
We need to use the technology to sort of cut out the characteristics that we need to not have in our society.
Yeah, and I would just say that when you're listening to people talk, even scientists who mean well, they always say we could do this, we could do this. It's important to understand that even if they don't think they're saying we as a few people, they are only talking about a few people. Mm. The we is not all of us. This is, and that's the first thing we have to remember. And secondly, we will not get to decide how these things get used.
That is just true. Yeah.
And I don't just mean me and Eduardo. I mean even at one level, the capitalists will not be able to control these things. They're always letting genies out of the bottle that they can't control here, because ultimately. They are driven to use these things to compete with one another, whether it be for profits or for war. And so that binds them into a particular relationship with these technologies. These technologies are amazing. Mm-hmm. But in the hands of capitalism, in the hands of this system, they can only produce a mess. Mm-hmm. And that's why we have to get rid of the system and make a revolution.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yes. I have one thing to share.
Go ahead.
One other thing that you can either keep or delete, however you want to.
Yeah.
But I thought it was what you were saying, Andy, kind of brought me back to something that happened to me. It's a sort of a story. And that is, you said something about the importance of just having children for the sake of having children, even if, you know, however they turn out to be.
Right.
And maybe the CRISPR technology could be used for a certain disease or something like that. That's it. But just all these other things that we're looking for in children, just why? Why are you saying this, no?
Yeah.
And it just reminded me how I had myself had even thought something like this when many years back I was working at a school here in San Francisco, and I'm trying to keep this person anonymous, but it was a woman that had wanted me to donate my sperm for her so that she can have children. And when she had first approached me, you know, I didn't know that she was actually trying to, she'd taken me out, we'd gone out to do an activity together. I won't mention what, because people will pinpoint people who know me, who she is. But we went to an activity out, we went out and we were talking and stuff, we'd been hanging out for some time. And she had been observing me and stuff, but she was observing me for other reasons and I didn't know why. But eventually she asked, I would like to know if you'd be open to having artificial insemination and using a donation from you. And I thought, pardon me? She had told me this, and I like, do you mean exactly, let me lay it out concretely, are we talking about? And she said yes. And I thought, I normally you would look at, and she had money. And I said, all right, I'm not really interested in money. I'm just interested to know why me. And, you know, there's a whole website where mm-hmm. you can look for profiles of people mm-hmm. with blue eyes, green eyes, tall people, blonde
right,
hair.
Right.
And all the things I would not make it for on right. that website for their profile.
Right.
And she said, oh, I'm not looking for that. Hmm. And she said, I'm looking for someone that is genuine, loving, a person that I would be considering. And, you know, all these flattering things I'm not going to talk about now because I'll get embarrassed. But the point being is she did that, and that her idea was just what you were saying, just to have children.
Right.
Where she could have the access to,
right.
for someone that had all these characteristics that mm-hmm. our society deems beautiful mm-hmm. in the society. Mm-hmm. And... but she was looking at me in a way that all these loving and wonderful things, even physically and stuff, which I appreciate and everything, but it's not that. It's just that she just wanted to have children with someone that she could right. trust that I wouldn't be basically an asshole to the future child.
Yeah, but also feeling that there might be something genetically that makes you who be that
she
warm person.
Some of this
yeah,
as
I
well.
Can imagine.
Yeah.
And so she's like, that is closer to how people have, you know, kind of brought couples together, you know. I get it.
Yeah.
I can see it.
Anyhow, I thought when you were talking all that, somehow
that's pretty neat. I didn't
came up to me.
I think I remember you telling me that before, but I had kind of forgotten.
Yeah.
That. Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
Anyways, you can choose to add this or
we'll
not,
see.
But
we'll
it's
see.
A
I think it's neat.
Sort of story.
I think probably
that
it's going to
be in my head.
Some modern day genetic engineering between you and that woman.
No, I'm not.
That's kind of closer to a version of natural or artificial selection being created by the yeah. Eduardo's kids.
Oh, God. Yeah. All right.
Did that happen?
No.
Oh.
Because I felt bad. I wrote a long email and I declined very respectfully.
I get it.
Because I don't think I could not be an involved person.
I see.
I'm very involved.
Yeah. That's true. You would.
I'm very
yes,
involved.
That's true.
You know how involved
yes,
I am.
You would not have been able to keep
I think
out.
She wanted to,
yeah,
some.
I'll take the sperm, but I don't want the dad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get it.
So
okay.
I don't know if I could do that. Anyhow, where are we heading? So this is it.
Yeah. We said, I think that's it for our episode.
Yeah.
We thought in about 2 weeks, in 2 weeks we're doing identity politics.
It seemed a little abrupt how we ended that, didn't it?
Nah, it's fine.
No? All right.
It's fine. It ended with the story.
All right, yeah. so we're
yeah.
keeping it, I can
yeah,
see.
We are keeping it. 2 weeks we're doing identity politics, and I think we were thinking maybe impeachment. We'll see. Next week's episode, we still are not sure. Maybe the from New Haven might contact us. We'll never know.
Yes.
There's a New Haven strike going, teacher strike. We contacted somebody.
Yes, we did. I sent an email out. I would really like for them to come out.
Yeah.
To really state, because I think we focus on Los Angeles and Oakland, but there's stuff that's going on near Union City that we
yeah.
need to see what's happening over there. And we've been covering strikes, so we need to really, and hopefully they will get back to me. Maybe
and
this week was too soon for them.
Yeah, in the absence of that, then we'll see.
Yeah, next week we'll see. But in 2 weeks from now, we will be discussing the hotly debated topic that even some of the people have been commenting down
yeah,
on our YouTube videos really, really, really are confused by some of the things that we're giving out of context. And I think we need to really cover it. So we'll cover it this month, we said, and it'll be identity politics, as
yes.
Andy has said. Yeah. I did want to mention one other thing that has happened, just to update people, because we did that in Sudan and Algeria. Argelia, excuse me, not Algeria. It's Argelia.
Algeria.
Yes.
That I would, that's
yeah,
how
but I'm just correcting in case Spanish speakers are looking at this and they'll be like, oh, is that how you say it? No. Argelia. Yeah. All right. I'm very precious about that. All right. Sorry. When I was contacting, when I was telling Andy, oh, can you get the name of this Chinese scientist as well? And is can you find out? And Andy's like, ah. And it's like, Andy, what was Roe versus Wade? The year, it's in the 70s. It's just, Dios mio, Andy, can you get
somewhere
to, like,
around then.
1973, please. That would
it was
be.
73?
I'm precious about those
you
things.
Are.
And the point is, what we need to say.
Yeah.
And you're just sloppy about mm-hmm. these things. You just want to get.
It's somewhere around there. It's like horseshoes. Just throw them.
And I was just telling Andy over it. Sometimes we see this the way that we do our channel or our episodes is like I'm farsighted, he's nearsighted, we have different
yeah
anyhow
yeah.
Let's get back to track. And so What was I saying, Andy? It was Sudan. So recently, the military, which speaks to what you had said in the last in that episode. Recently, the military has now thrown some people into the river, and has been killing more than 32 people. I have read even more than 50 people recently in these couple of days. And the Sudanese people are really calling for a civilian ruled government, but the military does not want to concede, and they are trying to have elections in 9 months. And this is something that is being, the military is being supported by Saudi Arabia, by Egypt, the U.S. I don't know about that. I didn't read that. Do you know this?
Saudi Arabia is supporting them, I don't even have to know. The United States is supporting it. Go ahead and check me on it. Go ahead. Everyone down there, I'm calling my check right now. United States supports the Sudanese criminals over there.
I'm not going to say...
All you had to do with Saudi Arabia, then it was done.
So this is... So the military is not willing to have any civilian ruled government. And so my heart goes out to them. I think we need to cover this. I was listening to... Not us, we've already covered, but I think it needs to be said.
Yeah.
So this is why I mentioned it at the end of this episode and giving people an update. But I heard a whole segment on KPFA and the Democracy Now! Today. So where is the media? The mainstream media? I don't know. But anyhow.
Well, that's because it's not just Trump that supports what's going on in Sudan. The Democrats do as well.
Yeah. All right.
Anyway, how can people find this thing?
Right. Please find us. Find us on iTunes podcast, Stitcher, BitChute.
I especially like your comments on BitChute.
Someone's been troll hunting.
Come bring it on, BitChute people. Come on. I want to hear your comments.
BitChute. Oh, God, Andy. It's no more.
The crazy libertarian rights out there. You know?
Okay, iTunes Podcast, Stitcher, BitChute, Google Play, and YouTube. Please rate, review, and subscribe.
I love my BitChute audience. Even you nut jobs.
All right. We'll catch you next
time. Take care.
Gracias. Ciao.